First question. Let's start with Boom. When did you first meet Ross Ritchie and Andrew Crosby?
I think it was in a Spanish jail.
Oh, yes?
About 10 years ago. It was, I know I met Ross, I met Andy a little before Ross, but that basically, you know, I can't remember which one of them drank my whiskey first, but it was about 10 years ago at San Diego at the, you know, the sort of the Hyatt watering hole. We all sort of end up there every San Diego, and so we got to know each other through that.
Okay. I'm sure you've seen a whole lot of small publishers come and go over the years, including some that were very well funded. You get kind of cynical about new publishers coming and announcing great big plans. But what made you think that Boom had the ability to stick around and be successful?
Well, one was that by the time I came aboard, Ross had already been up and running for a couple of years and had shown a very conservative growth pattern, which I was really in favor of, because, as you say, I've been watching guys, you know, come and go pretty quickly, or, you know, over the past 20 years or so. The guys, you know, pop up with the big plans and the big expansion, and Ross is also a notoriously frugal man, which is a pain in the ass when you're trying to find a parking space with him because you won't pay for a valet. But as a publisher, it makes him, you know, the kind of guy that you feel like you can get behind because he's not going to blow all his cash in the first couple of months.
Okay, well, selling full-color comics without, like, well-known creators is quite difficult in the comic industry. As an EIC, what is your plan of doing that?
Yeah. Wow. I short of slapping Secret Invasion Crisis on every cover, I'm not sure that there's a surefire way to do it. We're taking advantage of the fact that at the moment, the direct market cycle seems to be cycling against superheroes and more into what you call the indie stuff. The DC and Marvel sales are sliding, and yet the industry is still on a whole, on a growth pattern. And again, that's all cyclical. It'll change again in 6 months or a couple of years or whatever. It happens from time to time in the industry. But if we can get people's attention with non-superhero stuff right now, I can't think that there's been a better time.
Okay, there is a couple of things that Zoom and I mean that Boom announced. One of them was being Zoom. Was there supposed to be a children's imprint? What's going on with that?
We're actually still getting we're getting ready to make a big announcement about that in San Diego.
Oh, okay. So there's something coming up with that.
Yeah,
Okay.
absolutely.
And the other thing is also there was a mention of a Godfather license.
Right. That is still sadly pending. What happened was the strike out here, you know, the writer's strike just
Yes.
froze the whole town for a few months. And during that period, the Paramount regime that we were negotiating with when the strike began was not the Paramount regime that we ended up with when the strike ended. So while it's still everybody's best intent to try to get this up on and running at some point, it just became a whole new logistical nightmare. So that we could not possibly have foreseen before the strike. So we're still trying to make it work, but it's, you know, it has sort of become one of those sooner than now. Yeah, one of those projects that you know is perhaps a little bit further on down the year.
Yeah. Okay. As Boom EIC, I'm sure you get tons of pitches for new series. What is it that you're looking for when people pitch a new series to you?
First and foremost, I look for an ability to write, because I cannot tell you how many people come in with a really clever high concept or a really clever one paragraph pitch, but then you look at their work and it's evident that they don't understand the comics form, that they don't understand the language of the medium. We get our fair share, because we're out here in Hollywood, we get our fair share of screenwriters out here who want to debut their screenplays as comics. And I, you know, an idea is an idea, and that's great if it can carry across both medium or both media. But when it doesn't, when it's a case of a guy coming in just trying to get his screenplay on paper, then that's the kind of stuff that makes me throw them out on their ear. I mean, it's what will sell me is if you come in not only with a big high concept, and frankly, it helps to be a little bit commercial if you can. I mean, we're not averse to publishing more esoteric material, but given, as you said, that you know every inch of shelf space in this industry at this moment is a hard-fought battle, as a startup young publisher, we have to be a little conscientious about the fact that we would like the stuff to, you know, to have some sort of mass appeal. So stories about, you know, 16th century Amish priests are probably out, you know, or probably not as sexy to us as a high concept thriller. So, but what sells me is when guys come in and they have a clear high concept, it's an interesting sort of commercial property, and they make me care about the characters right off the bat and make me interested and invested in what their characters are invested in. There's a lot of guys who come in with the plot and the idea, but they have no idea of what characters are.
Mm-hmm. Okay, actually, on that same note, I'm sure there's some stuff that might appeal to you personally, but you wonder about, is it going to appeal to the general audience? And there's also a little bit of, maybe this will appeal to the general audience, or maybe it won't. And like, do you tend to go with more with projects that you think will appeal to you personally versus what you think might be commercial or what?
I try to strike a balance. I know that sounds like a BS answer, but it's true. I mean, I can't put only books about Elvis Presley on the stands, you know, or whatever might be holding my interest at that moment, because I think the worst thing you can do as an editor-in-chief, no matter where you are, is confuse your own personal tastes with what's good.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that as an editor, you clearly have to have a vision for your line of books. You have to have, standards by which you judge the artistic merit of the material and the commercial merit of the material. But you just have to find that balance between it's saleable, but it's still something that you can live with. We could do a lot of books with bad girls with guns on the covers, and that would be more marketable, but it just makes me flinch.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, you know, to the other extreme, I can see how perhaps zombie tales are not necessarily my favorite reading in the world on a personal level, but they do really well for us, and it gives us a venue to do a bunch of different kind of stories. So, you know, as long as the stories are good, whether or not it's something I personally would choose to read on my off hours is not what's at issue. What's at issue is, you know, are we providing the fans and the readers with material that they find interesting?
And actually, just thinking about Boom, I know some small publishers, they try to make a niche for themselves, and they tend to focus on, like, a certain brand of content, I'd say. But with Boom, you've been publishing everything from superheroes to gritty crime to supernatural horror. Are you interested in shaping Boom one way or another, or you just still want to go with whatever's, you know, pitched to you and that you like?
No, the idea is I've been doing this now for about 10 months,
mm-hmm.
Coming up on a year. So the first year was really just sort of getting throwing a bunch of stuff out there and seeing what the market responded to and seeing what I personally responded to. Now that we have about a year of stuff under our belt and I can start to chart some legitimate trends and start to get a reading on what worked and what didn't, either artistically or sales-wise, that's going to help me shape with Ross and with Andy. It's going to help me shape year two. It's going to help. I would like to mold the company a little bit more along the lines of the genres that we do, rather than you know, have it feel like Boom publishes just anything. That said, you know, I don't want to pin us down into just being the horror company or the crime thriller company. It's a very difficult position. I mean, it's every day we fight over that. We don't want to limit our genres to the point where we become a little corner of the market. But at the same time, you know, trying to be everything to everybody is also suicidal. So, good question, Jamie. I'm just, you're still trying to find the middle ground.
Okay. Okay, and I was thinking about your job as editorial creative. I know with, like, Boom, it's a small company, and you don't have, like, say, the huge staff that Marvel does. Are you just doing creative stuff, or are you also thinking about when things get published as trade paperbacks, dealing with budgets and promotions, or like, how far does your job go? I imagine, like, ESC job is different in every company, but...
I can say this definitively from 25 years in the industry, is that editor-in-chief is a job title that is different at every place I've ever worked.
Yeah.
It does extend to all those things and more. I mean, I'm more comfortable paying more attention to the creative end of it than to the budgetary end or to the promotion end, just because there's only so many hours in the day and I have to concentrate on the things that I specifically can do well. But that said, one of the things I really like about the smallness of Boom is that everybody is sort of pitching in on everybody else's business all the time, and in a good way. I mean, we're constant, like, Chip does the press releases, but, you know, I proofread them for him because I'm a better proofreader than he is, but he's a better press release writer than I am. So it's, you know, or we'll talk about budgets and I'll have ideas creatively as to how to stretch a dollar here and there with the material that we do or the resources that we have available to us. So it's, you know, I do try to get up in everybody's business, frankly, but so far so good.
Speaking of promotion and advertising, are you doing anything outside of normal comic related channels?
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, it's the biggest thing we've had going, and Chip started this, was the MySpace initiative where we had put up the first issue of Northwind, 6-8 months ago on MySpace, the same day that it came out to retailers. And while there was some understandable blowback from retailers that we didn't give them sufficient notice to let them know that it was going to be out the same day as it was out in print, and I can understand their being upset about that. It was just an unfortunate timing set of circumstances, but that did really well for us, and we're taking advantage of the connections we have in other web spaces and other electronic media. That to me is the key to it all. I mean, we can advertise in comic shops all we want, but at the end of the day, those are still basically Marvel and DC stores. They have to be in order to survive. And while we love our retail partners in, on the direct sale market, you know, it's Clicheville. Let me just say that a rising, you know, tide floats all boats. So if we can get more people interested outside of comic shops, hopefully that will steer them into comic shops.
Okay, yeah, because I was just thinking that I know small publishers always have a struggle between what's good for them and sometimes what's good for the direct market as the two. Well, we'd like one of the two to be the same. Sometimes there's things like it's good for the publishers that retailers don't like, such as like selling direct to customers like during conventions or
right.
or doing, let's say, digital downloads.
And it's going to continue to be a struggle. Obviously, at the end of the day, nobody makes any money if Boom goes out of business, you know, retailers or us. And, you know, it's a lose-lose for everybody. So in those hard situations where you have to choose between what's going to make the retailers happy and what's going to benefit us, sometimes you have to just hope for the best and choose self-preservation and worry about the fallout later, which is unfortunate, and it shouldn't come to that, but sometimes it does for every company. So we try to look at the long game, at the idea that our health is beneficial to the health of the whole industry.
Okay, and actually, you just recently made a joke about John Byrne drawing something for Boom. What was going on about that?
Oh! It was just that what happened was I made some earlier crack about John Byrne on the State of the Industry panel, and then 5 minutes later, I was talking about how we were going to have somebody write the Farscape book that was going to blow your mind, and Eric Larson leaned in and whispered, "John Byrne," and I laughed and repeated the joke, and the audience was in on it because they were in for the setup, and they were, you know, there was laughter, and then the next thing I know, it actually got reported all over the web that weekend. John Byrne to write Farscape? Oh, man. So, Even the jokes get taken seriously sometimes.
Yeah. speaking of writing, you did a book called Potter's Field for Boom. That was quite different from you. I understand it was originally supposed to be called John Doe, is what I'm reading online. When did you get involved with it?
I've had it in my back pocket for about 10 years. It was just an idea I had back in the 90s when I was living in Brooklyn, and Jimmy Palmiotti and I were sitting around my house one day. I think Garib Sheamus was there, and we were just talking about Gatecrasher back in the day that we were doing that for Black Ball. And somehow the mention of the graveyard that is Potter's Field came up in conversation, and I didn't know anything about this, and it immediately logged into my mind. I immediately got this image in my head of a faceless guy in a slouch hat just moving from unmarked grave to unmarked grave, chiseling names in one at a time. And I held on to that for a while and tried to develop it as an ongoing series and just never had a whole lot of time to devote to it. But that was part of coming to Boom, is being able to do that as a three-issue mini with Paul Azaceta, and then do another few issues, hopefully this spring, where we can relaunch it.
Okay, when you relaunch it, are you planning on doing another mini, or is it going to go, like, ongoing, or do you know?
I'm not sure yet.
Not sure yet, okay. Are you writing anything else new for Boom, or?
Yeah, but we haven't. It's all in the stockpiling process right now. I've got a couple of three series that I'm building within the company that I'll be writing and, you know, editing myself. But first priority right now is just getting to San Diego, for God's sake.
Yeah.
Once San Diego is over with, I can sort of dust my hands a little bit and hand some of the other smaller editorial duties over to some of the other staff and go home and spend more time at the keyboard.
Yeah.
So the plan is then to roll out some stuff next year.
Okay, and I know you're writing Spider-Man.
Yep.
Do you know what issue of Amazing Spider-Man will be your first?
I think 578, I believe, is the first one.
Okay. I know other Spider-Man writers were being told, or at least were creating their own villains when they started the Brand New Day. Are you doing this as well?
Actually, not so much with the villains, because the villain, actually, the way my first story structured, isn't really a very important part of the story. It's more of a situational crisis where Spider-Man and a bunch of innocent people are caught in a horrible situation that doesn't have much to do with villains. So, but that said, I'm creating some other new interesting characters to put in it, but I can't really talk about that at great length right now.
Okay. Do you know how long your first story will be? Because I understand everybody bounced around with different lengths on their stories.
I'm not sure if it's two or three, and then hopefully I can get back in that rotation fairly soon after that.
Okay. Are they letting you play with any of the major villains yet?
If I'd asked, but I didn't think to go there yet.
Okay. Because I know that, like they said before, that, or at least Dan Slott was telling me before, that they want to put away the major villains for a bit and bring them out when it's really special.
That's a smart idea. I think that there's only so many Dr. Octopus stories that you can write that are any good. So.
Mm-hmm. And it gets to the point where you see them over and over and over again, and it's just like it's no big deal when he comes out again.
Yeah.
Are you going to reveal that Spider-Man's a Skrull?
I'm not going to reveal Spider-Man's a Skrull. I have no plans of doing that. You know, other than that, no comment, but don't quote me.
Okay. And actually, one more question. This is like well over a year ago. You offered to pay for any lawsuits involving that deadbeat so-called publisher, Rick Only.
Absolutely.
Has anything come from that?
A couple of things. Actually, a couple of guys have filed and won in small claims court, which I'm very proud of. And, you know, I don't know that as long as his name is spoken in public and he actually is still interested someday in putting on store, on conventions rather, that I don't know that anything will ever permanently come of that. But I'm very excited about the fact that people actually took me up on my offer, because, again, my heart went out to guys who's, you know, were out $1,000 or a couple of thousand dollars because of this complete low life scum who was taking advantage of people and ripping them off. And I understand the position where if you've lost that kind of, if you're in a position where that kind of money is a life or death situation for you, then you're also in a position where you can't afford the few hundred dollars it takes to actually file a claim to get that money back.
Mm-hmm.
So my offer to a lot of those guys was, look, if you're willing to do the paperwork and the legwork, I'll fund you, I'll stake you. I can't do anything more than that, but that's the best I can do. And so a couple of guys, and I think there's at least one other case that's still pending. So I think it's there's been some money gotten back, which is good.
Oh, there actually has been some money gotten back?
Or at the very least, judgments have been filed.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Okay, then, and I guess that's about it. I had about 20 questions, and you went through them real quick. And so.
Okay.
Okay, well, thank you very much. You don't mind if I put this audio file online?
No, not at all.
No?
Just,
okay,
you know,
then.
I hope I sound reasonably articulate, but by all means, please. And send me a link when you get a chance.
Yeah, I will. Okay, then. Well, thank you very much, Mark.
You bet.
I'll let you get on to your busy day.
All right, thanks.
Okay, bye-bye.